Hello, I'm Liz Chambers. A glimmer of justice. That's how many progressives greeted the surprise ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that the Bush administration has violated the Geneva Convention and possibly U.S. criminal law with regard to holding prisoners at Guantanamo Bay.
The Supreme Court's decision striking down the president's military commissions is, in fact, yet another major rebuke to an administration that has too often disregarded the rule of law.
Initially, the White House inferred that it would accept the decision. But like many supposed reversals from the Bush-Cheney White House, this one proved to be more style than substance. Bush's fellow Republicans soon set into motion a carefully orchestrated effort to discredit the Supreme Court ruling and protect the White House from possible impeachment for high crimes. For example, a far-fetched scenario about reading a terrorist his Miranda rights was raised repeatedly.
It could make the difference between whether thousands die or not.
It could. You're not going to. It pretty much will put a stop to the questioning of the detainee for intelligence purposes.
I
mean, point of fact, Senator, it would obligate the soldier on the field, the corporal who beats down, that knocks down the door, to advise that detainee of his rights if he believed that detainee to have committed a crime.
But defense of U.S.-sanctioned torture isn't the only place the corporate Congress is building a soft landing for Bush and his cabinet. Congressional leaders also seem prepared to rewrite the law, if necessary, to protect the president from prosecution for his illegal wiretapping activities.
If it satisfies the president, it should satisfy the House of Representatives.
Proponents of impeachment continue to make their case. Here's a trailer from a new documentary on the subject.
Since 9/11, it has been clear that the principal enemy of democracy has been in the White House.
The president announced to the nation in December that his administration had been carrying out wiretapping on the American public without warrants.
The president lied to Congress, committed fraud on Congress.
Detainees in U.S. custody have been subject to widespread torture.
He shredded habeas corpus. That's impeachable. It's subverting the very nature of our constitutional democracy.
Impeachment is a necessary step.
This is a real grassroots campaign.
People are pushing for their state legislatures to pass an impeachment resolution and send it on to the House.
The Republicans have put up a loud, bold front that this is great for us, but I think they're really frightened of it.
You know, it's worth remembering, 2 years after winning a monstrous landslide victory, Richard Nixon was waving goodbye to the American public.
We've had enough. This president has ruined this country. Let's impeach him.
What happens as we privatize our infrastructure, at the same time subsidizing military contractors, oil companies, and nuclear energy plants? Things begin to fall apart, and foreign buyers swoop in to purchase our infrastructure at fire sale prices.
In Indiana, known as the Crossroads of America, this entire toll road is about to be turned over to two companies from Australia and Spain for the next 75 years. The Chicago Skyway has been leased for 99 years. It will cost motorists more because they will now have to pay tolls.
Privatization has also led to regular failures in our electrical grids. According to journalist Greg Palast, deregulation has given utilities such as the New York-based Entergy company the ability to thumb their noses at the public. Corp Watch reports that Entergy, which also supplies utilities to New Orleans, raked in $10 billion in profits last year. Despite those massive profits, however, they have refused to foot the $718 million needed to restore full electricity and gas to their New Orleans customers. Speaking of New Orleans, Liberty News TV reporter Victor Damian has just returned from that ruined city, where he filed this report on the fate of the city's returning refugees.
Nearly a year after Katrina, New Orleans is still a disaster zone. Some people have been able to come back home on their own. However, for those needing assistance, the road back home ends at a wire fence.
The people of New Orleans have a right to return back to their home. Not only do the residents of public housing have a right to come home, but the citizen, every citizen pre-Katrina, have a right to come home regardless to where they live.
Survivors Village, located in the doorstep of the St. Bernard housing development, has been set up here as a symbolic protest by the St. Bernard residents, who this 4th of July came from other parts of the country to protest in the streets of New Orleans for the right to come back home.
Public housing! Public housing!
Then sometime around April, May, HUD provided money to put fences around the whole development. And I was told that it's somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 to do this. With that money, they could have put in all the utilities for all the apartments.
Well, when I first came back from Iraq, I found out from FEMA what they could help me do, and I asked them please supply a trailer for me. And they asked me where I'd been living the last couple of years. I said Iraq. And they said, "Well, I'm sorry, you don't qualify because you weren't here during the storm." I says, "But this is my primary residence. I'm a homeowner here."
The families of the St. Bernard Public Housing in New Orleans are now in exile. They bring their issues to the city council. However, the city council is powerless to do anything.
In the past, the city council has regulated the housing developments, but under the previous administration, that was put under receivership. So the federal government now totally controls the process, and we really understand their frustration, but we don't have the economic or the local control of that particular entity anymore.
There may as well be a sign outside of the city of New Orleans saying that poor people and working class people are not welcome back. They terminated all of the teachers. The public health care system that we relied on, the charity hospital and the various city satellite health care clinics, both for physical health and mental health, they've all been closed. They have not been reopened. Public housing, which is home to over 5,000 families, has been closed but for 800 people who have been allowed to come back. And there's over 4,000 families that have not been allowed to come back to the properties here. So they're essentially closing the doors to anybody who can't make it back on their own.
This systematic plan of exclusion has been publicly voiced by some officials, such as Alfonso Jackson, the Secretary of HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, who in September 29 of 2005 stated that New Orleans is not going to be as black as it was for a long time, if ever again. Another public official making such comments is GOP Representative Richard H. Baker, a Republican from Baton Rouge, who was overheard telling lobbyists, "We finally cleaned up public housing in New Orleans. We couldn't do it, but God did." The St. Bernard Public Housing Development is a prime real estate area, only minutes from the French Quarter and New Orleans Business District. Its demolition and possible privatization will benefit real estate developers and possibly drive housing prices up, while the working poor, former residents, will be forced to fence on their own somewhere else in the country. In response to this, the St. Bernard Public Housing residents have filed a lawsuit against Alfonso Jackson for the right to come back home. Once again, Katrina survivors, like those in Survivors Village, have been hit by another catastrophe. This time, powerful economic forces and misguided politicians are threatening to destroy their homes and displace them to other parts of the nation.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, this is Victor Damian reporting for Liberty News TV.
Our highways and power grids aren't the only pieces of the public commons for sale to the highest bidder. For example, are you aware that the Supreme Court has just redefined the definition of a wetland? For years, developers have been lobbying to remove wetland protections, and now their effort has paid off. It gets worse. Under cover of high oil prices, the Congress has approved drilling in ocean waters along our coastlines. At the same time, the Bush White House hopes to drag the nation backwards into dependence on nuclear power. The mainstream press, with few exceptions, has simply repeated the propaganda from the administration, repackaging nuclear energy as a clean, efficient alternative to fossil fuels.
And more production here at home, including safe, clean nuclear energy.
But as Dr. Helen Caldicott points out, nuclear energy is neither clean nor efficient. She explains that even if we built enough new reactors to replace all fossil fuel-powered utilities in the world, current supplies of enriched uranium would last for only 3 or 4 years. How does one obtain more enriched uranium? by creating it using massive fossil fuel powered plants. Nuclear generators also release millions of curies of radioactive isotopes into our air and water each year, a fact that is rarely acknowledged by the industry. And the solid waste disposal problem is worse than ever. Remember the promises that radioactive waste could be safely buried at Yucca Mountain in Nevada? That plan has fallen apart. Scientists recently learned that the Yucca nuclear trash pit was built over 32 earthquake faults. We already have 80,000 tons of radioactive poison temporarily stored at our existing nuclear plants. In international affairs, the U.S. seems to have lost both the will and the credibility to lead. For example, shortly after the White House criticized North Korea for launching test missiles, the Pentagon fired our own missile across the Pacific. In the Middle East, instead of demanding an end to Israel's assault on its Arab neighbors, the United States is resupplying the Israelis with precision-guided bombs.
I'm not exactly sure whether the United States' active intervention would achieve anything at this particular time.
Really? Why not?
Well, the events are going to have to sort themselves out to a certain degree.
Topping the list of foreign policy failures, of course, is Iraq. In June, civilian deaths in that country averaged 100 per day, totaling more than 3,100. That's about 100 more men, women, and children killed in 1 month than died in the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon combined. Writers such as Bob Kohler suggest that the bloodshed rocking the Middle East can be traced to the precedent set by U.S. leaders. And they have been cheered on by the radical fringe of fundamentalist Christians. In fact, a new video game allows would-be rapture survivors to fight out the end times.
Throughout history, men and women have chosen one of three paths. Those who daily seek a personal relationship with God, unbelievers and believers who don't seek after God, and those who choose to ignore God. And as the prophets foretold, God will come to take his people home. No one knows the day or the hour. Without any warning, all infants, children, and many people mysteriously disappear. Terror and confusion reign the world over. For those left behind, the apocalypse has just begun.
That clip doesn't reveal the details of the game. Here's a summary. You are issued high-tech military weaponry and instructed to engage the infidel on the streets of New York City. You are on a mission, both a religious mission and a military mission, to convert or kill Catholics, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, gays, and anyone who advocates the separation of church and state, especially moderate mainstream Christians. It's not just these fringe groups that are challenging traditional American ideas about tolerance, dissent, and free speech. The FBI now describes certain environmental activists as eco-terrorists, naming them the number one domestic threat in the United States.
There's always been a situation, you know, where there'd be an occasional rogue police officer or uptight prosecutor who'd do something kind of reactionary and repressive, but that's not what we're seeing now. What we're seeing now is a more coordinated, on several different fronts, all of which kind of common theme of it, and it fits into a national hysteria that's been taking place ever since 9/11.
It's not the first time in U.S. history that dissenting views have been singled out by law. In 1855, for example, the state of Kansas made it illegal to criticize slavery. Any public statement against slavery, published or otherwise, could land you in prison as a felon. If you think outlawing an idea is a relic of our past, think again. In Maine, Democratic State Senator John Nutting recently penned an eco-terrorist bill aimed at imprisoning future environmental protesters. This bill establishes the crime of environmental terrorizing, which is a crime of violence dangerous to human life or destructive to property or business practices for the primary purpose of protesting a natural resource or environmental issue. The bill went even further, suggesting that any environmentally motivated activity that cost the corporation money could be treated as a felony offense. Activists describe such bills as part of a green scare, similar to the so-called Red Scare of communism, fueled by Senator Joe McCarthy in the 1950s.
You say, no, you know, we don't have to put up with it. It doesn't have to be this way. We can unite and fight back.
We asked Governor John Baldacci of Maine about the eco-terrorism bill at a meeting in Portland, Maine.
That was the original legislation, and they were going to make it a felony, environmental terrorism.
Right.
But they watered down the bill, but it's different than what it was initially.
As Baldacci notes, Nutting's bill was drastically revised before the governor signed it into law, with the specific references to motivation removed. Leading state Democrats such as Mike Brennan of Portland note, however, that even in its final form, the bill was unfortunate and unnecessary. If you get your internet access through one of the big providers, you may not be aware that you are fueling right-wing political candidates or endorsing censorship and government access to your private records. We asked our friends at buyblue.org to research how America Online, Yahoo, and MSN spend your money. Here's what they found. America Online is a big player in Washington. They recently were caught censoring emails critical of efforts to keep the internet free and neutral. In 2006 alone, they have given nearly $300,000 to their political allies, 61% of that money to Republicans. Yahoo isn't much better. Yahoo joined a toll-keeping effort with AOL in February. They want to start charging for every email delivered through their system. That toll will ultimately come from your pocket. Yahoo's political record so far this year, $102,000, 60% to Republican candidates. You don't have to underwrite the privatization of the internet. Liberty News TV did some research of our own and has created a partnership with an internet organization called ManyOne. They donate a portion of their subscription fees to socially responsible nonprofit organizations, including ours, rather than rubber stamp political candidates. You can learn more at RestoreTheMedia.com. That's all for the news. Coming up next on the Quinn Report, Daniel Noel offers some real-world solutions for global warming.
Hi, everybody. I'm Daniel Noel, filling in for Kevin Quinn. Al Gore's new movie about global warming is great, but it makes saving the planet sound too easy. To hear Al and his new friend Tom Brokaw tell it, Earth's big meltdown can be prevented if we all just switch a couple of light bulbs around in the McMansion, buy a hybrid car, and plant a tree.
We're going to have a more Spartan lifestyle, especially in a place like America, in which we're all very accustomed to our luxuries and efficiencies and ease of life.
I don't think so. I think we can at least start and make a lot of progress on this problem without turning our lifestyle upside down.
Don't get me wrong. Every effort helps, but on their own, these baby steps will have about as much chance of reversing global warming as those rickety old levees did of shutting out Hurricane Katrina. We're all in deep, deep trouble. Facing down global warming will require major changes in our lives. We'll have to make sacrifices. That's right. I said the S word. But first, in case you're one of the ostrich people who think global warming is just a theory or somebody else's problem, ponder this. Stephen Hawking, the Nobel Prize-winning scientist, predicts that, left unchecked, global warming could change Earth's climate into a toxic stew like the planet Venus. When Stephen Hawking is scared, I'm scared. Here's the scenario. If the permanent ice in Greenland melts, sea levels will rise 20 feet, and guess what? Greenland is already melting. So is Antarctica. In either case, half of Florida goes underwater, along with coastal areas all over the U.S. and the world, home to about a billion people. Let's say you're a doubting Thomas who lives in Iowa. You're a red-blooded American who believes immigrants should be sent back to Mexico, that taxes are Satan's tool of oppression, and the Second Amendment was handed down to Moses, played by Charlton Heston, on Mount Sinai. As millions of refugees from our sunken coastline straggle inland in search of land, food, and plunder, your high ground is going to look mighty appealing. One morning you could look out your bedroom window and see this. Of course, that's just the first phase of the global warming nightmare, the easy phase. After Greenland melts, the Gulf Stream current could literally stop in its tracks, triggering a new ice age. the United States could end up buried under a mile of ice in less than 10 years. Are you worried yet? We have about 5 seconds, geologically speaking, to change course before the bad times come. Let's stop wasting time. Here's my list of 8 things we must do right now. Number 1, use birth control. You hear a lot of nonsense about how the U.S. doesn't have an overpopulation problem. That might be true if you only counted heads like the government. But every American born today produces about 6 tons of carbon dioxide pollution per year. A person born in India produces about 0.3 tons. That's because each of us eats, wears, and throws away more crap than 20 people in the developing world each year. And the trend is toward bigger. Bigger toys. Bigger houses. Bigger egos. And that goes for the spoiled offspring of liberals just the same as the Bush twins. Family planning. It's a wonderful thing. Number 2. Live small. American home sizes just reached their largest average size in history. How about a hefty pollution tax on every square foot of space in a new home beyond a reasonable size? What's reasonable? Well, about half the population lives in a home or apartment smaller than 1,500 square feet. That seems like a good cutoff point. Research shows that when you double a home size, you triple the amount of energy it requires and pollution it creates. If you're not building a super-efficient green home, you shouldn't be building a home at all. If you have a problem with that, try living under a mile of ice instead. 3. Stop flying. Getting on an airplane with your family to go to Disney World each year is not a birthright. In fact, it may be a crime against nature. Try out the pollution calculator at nativeenergy.com. Every time you roar across the country and back, you individually dump about 1.5 tons of carbon dioxide into the air, the equivalent of driving an SUV 3,000 miles. If you must travel, take a train. Better yet, ride a bike. The exercise will get you in shape for hiking thousands of miles across the frozen tundra if nobody else follows your lead. 4. Become a vegetarian. Meat eating is a luxury none of us can afford anymore. A recent study from the University of Chicago found that in 1 year, a person with a typical diet of 30% meat creates 1.5 metric tons of air pollution. A vegetarian creates only about half that much. In other words, the vegetarian has the impact of driving a hybrid for a year, while the meat eater is a walking SUV. Incidentally, fish harvesting causes about as much environmental havoc as red meat and chicken on the CO2 pollution scale. 5. No lawns are good lawns. A Swedish study found that mowing your lawn for an hour creates about the same air pollution as driving a mid-sized car 100 miles. A Harris survey found that on average, American families spend $1,200 per year on lawn maintenance. For what? That's 60 times what most people received from the Bush tax cuts. Turn your lawn into a native garden. Not only is it beautiful, but you never have to mow again, and you can eat the proceeds. 6. Boycott knickknacks. Coal-fired plants are a major source of global warming. Guess which country is turning the skies black with coal? Hint. It's a place that's home to more than 3,000 Walmart suppliers. That's right, China. What's fueling China's dirty industrialization? You are. Every time you walk in and buy a lawn chair, some flip-flops, a yellow ribbon sticker, or a cheap fan made in China, you throw another shovel full of coal on the global warming fire. By the way, clean coal technology is a pipe dream. It doesn't exist. Don't believe the onslaught of propaganda being put out by the coal industry in the U.S.
The good news is that in my lifetime, electricity from clean coal technologies will continue to cost way less than power from other fuels. Go here. They'll tell you.
7. Throw the bums out. This ought to be obvious, but the corporate lapdogs in Washington need to go. Most of them happen to be Republicans, although those political distinctions may seem quaint when we're fighting with stray dogs for scraps of food. The League of Conservation Voters has researched the worst of these two-legged environmental hazards. Their top 7 offenders: Richard Pombo of California, Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, Catherine Harris of Florida, Jim Talent of Missouri, Heather Wilson of New Mexico, Bob Nade of Ohio, and Conrad Burns of Montana. That's seven good reasons to vote in November.
Eight.
Here's something that's especially hard for a lot of people. Be strident. Talk some sense into your friends. You wouldn't keep your mouth shut if one of them peed in your hot tub, right? Why bite your tongue when they fly off to Totola for the third time this winter or make plans to build a 4,000-square-foot second home? We're all hypocrites, of course. None of us, including our Liberty News TV staff, can claim a clean global warming record. But the point isn't to be perfect. The point is to set higher goals than recycling your wine bottles and shopping for your meat at trendy organic supermarkets. Of course, you don't have to do anything at all about global warming. One day, perhaps in a few short years, it won't matter anymore. As the electricity stops working in your home and you lose contact with your friends and family, you may wonder what the hell is going on. Then, as the snow piles high, reaching the level of your home's second floor, you may become a bit frightened. It will be hard to cast the blame for this one on gay marriage or environmental activists or internet predators or immigrants. You may wish you could turn back time and make some different choices. But of course, by then, it will be too late.
Liberty News TV depends on the support of viewers like you, not corporations. Visit our website at libertynewstv.com and let us know you care.